Blog Talk Radio.
News day that I had selected all my stories that I knew I was going to do on air by like 11 o'clock. Usually it's much longer than that, and I'm fucking preparing until the last minute. It was just like a fucking avalanche of news stories fell on my head this morning right when I woke up. So I've been ready to go for a while, man. A lot of great stuff to talk about. We have billionaires who get subsidies complaining about subsidies. Oh, we live in the Twilight Zone. Jimmy Carter keeps it super duper duper real about what goes on in American politics and what kind of a system we really have. We have Hillary Clinton releases an ad. It's getting mixed reviews. My opinion on it is not mixed, though. My opinion on it, I have very strong opinions on it. I can't wait to play it for you. And then also, just so much fucking substance, I don't even know what to do with all the substance. We have the Daily Beast talking about the business of war. Really great article with some really great facts in there, some great numbers as to who's getting rich off this. There are people getting rich off of war, and we have details. Then there's also two other foreign policy reports coming out. One as to what the U.S. is going to do in Syria, and then the other one is civilian casualties, and they're both bad. So we'll talk about that, and a little bit of Caitlyn Jenner in the show, a little bit of Netanyahu, I got a little bit of everything today. Toy guns randomly made its way into the show. Porn made its way into the show. Definitely not going to finish it all, but we may as well try. So let's go ahead and get started. And we'll kick it off with the Koch brothers. You can probably guess that this story is not going to praise them. According to the International Business Times, the billionaire, Charles Koch, recently went off at a conservative event, and he railed against, quote, taxpayer-funded subsidies and preferential treatment for corporations. Now, that's great. I mean, that's like a rant I would go on, and it's nice to have somebody who's rich and powerful go on that rant. Now, what he's doing is he's not articulating a liberal message, but he's articulating a truly libertarian message. But the only problem with that is he's a liar. So he talks about how subsidies are bad and big government is bad, but the International Business Times reports here, quote, "That message, though, came from an industrialist whose company and corporate subsidiaries have raked in tens of millions of dollars worth of such largesse. The Koch-organized conference at a luxury resort in Southern California reportedly attracted roughly 450 conservative donors who have committed to spending nearly $900 million on the 2016 presidential election. The event also is scheduled to include Republican presidential candidates. Koch's firm, Koch Industries, and its subsidiaries have secured government subsidies worth more than $166 million, and since 1990, Koch-owned properties have received more than 191 separate subsidies." So let me tweak his message to reflect what it actually is. He's not saying he's against all subsidies. He's saying he's against subsidies for you, but he's for subsidies for himself. You guys know the way that this works. Now, usually when you have rich people who are against subsidies, what they mean is just for the poor and the middle class, but him and all other rich people they can get subsidies. With the Charles Koch, we have another layer of hypocrisy where it's not even just, hey, fuck the middle class and the poor. In his mind, it's fuck the middle class, the poor, and the other rich people. I'm going to talk about how all corporate subsidies are bad, except, of course, just my corporate subsidies. Now, understand, man, if he truly was against subsidies, there's a way that he can prove that, and he can make it so that he'd get the people off of his back like me, just return all the money. That's it. So you're against subsidies, right? You're giving these rants about corporate welfare, welfare for the rich. In fact, there's a literal quote that he had. I don't have it in front of me here, but in the article there's a quote where he says, we should start with cutting welfare for the rich. Okay, so if you want to do that, fine. Return all 191 subsidies that you got for your business. And, I mean, they said here it's over $166 million. At another part in the article, they say it's $195 million or thereabouts. That's the more specific number. So go ahead, buddy. Return $195 million. Do it tomorrow, and then I'll listen to you, and we can pretend like you're principled when you want to talk about how big government is bad. But the Koch brothers have always spoken out of both sides of their mouth on this because they claim to be libertarian, but then they also fund groups that push a social conservative ideology. So they say, like, ah, gays are fine, we got nothing against gays. And then meanwhile, they're giving money to ultra-right-wing religious groups that are against gay marriage, that are anti-abortion, and you name it. So I'm done with these guys. I mean, I was never with them to begin with, but I'm over them either way, and I know that they're liars either way because their actions contradict things that they say. I've seen it in an interview with Barbara Walters. Again, they brought up, no, we're not conservative Republicans. We're very libertarian. Are you kidding? I'm hip. I'm with it. Tuck, 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 tuck. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're just like every other uber capitalist billionaire who wants subsidies. And actually, it's not even fair of me to call them capitalists because they're not capitalists. True capitalists understand that they're functioning in a marketplace where if they fail, they fail. These guys have made it so that they know they can't fail, because they've bought the government. So whenever they get in trouble, the government can rush in and bail them out and give them money, and they love it. It's just, again, for you that they don't want there to be any kind of safety net. They don't want there to be any kinds of subsidies. So they have their ideology totally backwards. And remember, these are the assholes. They're billionaires. Billionaires. And they fight. They have an organized effort to fight an increase in the minimum wage. How ridiculous is this? They're billionaires. They make more money in an hour than their minimum wage workers make all year. Times however many more times. I mean, it's incredible how much more money they make. So these are really deeply unethical guys and really bad guys because they pretend to be principled, but meanwhile they go around and they're just masking an agenda that's exactly like Sheldon Adelson's agenda, for example, or Foster Freeze's agenda. I mean, these are people who very clearly only are oligarchs and want to buy the government. Anything else they tell you is horseshit because the actions speak louder than the words. So they can pretend like they're libertarian all day long, but when their actions are not libertarian, it's clear where their heart lies. Okay. Now, sticking with a very, very similar issue here, we go to Jimmy Carter. President Jimmy Carter went on Tom Hartman's radio show, and Tom asked him about the issue of money in politics, and his answer is both refreshingly honest and a heartbreaking affirmation of what we already knew.
Now it's just an oligarchy with unlimited political bribery being the essence of getting the nominations for president or elected president. And the same thing applies to governors and U.S. senators and Congress members. So now we've just seen a complete subversion of our political system as a payoff to major contributors who want and expect and sometimes get favors for themselves after the election's over.
Yeah. In 30 seconds, he just absolutely nailed it. And it really shakes you to your core to hear a former U.S. president say that. See, sometimes we admittedly all live in our own bubbles, and, you know, we oftentimes only talk to like-minded people, and you get this echo chamber effect, where you know you believe something, but when it's only coming from inside your own little bubble, you're not 100% sure, and, you know, there are conflicting theories and whatnot. But when you hear somebody who's not, I mean, President Jimmy Carter's fantastic, and now he certainly is part of a liberal movement or a progressive movement, he's doing great charity work and stuff like that. But we're talking about somebody who was the establishment. We're talking about somebody who was president of the United States of America. And he's saying, come on, man, I mean, we have an oligarchy now. I mean, that's what it is now. He's saying that. This isn't Code Pink. You know, this isn't Bernie Sanders, and Bernie Sanders has said it time and time again. But we're talking about somebody here who most would look at him, agree or disagree with him, and they'd go, oh, he is the establishment, he was the establishment, he represented the United States of America, he was the president of the United States of America, the most powerful man in the world, and now he's saying, hey, we have an oligarchy. I want everybody to understand that what he just said right there is not just an opinion. Some people think, well, that's his take on it, my take is different, or whatever. No, no. This isn't an issue where, hey, what does Bob think? Hey, what does Jeff think? No, there is an empirical reality out there, and President Jimmy Carter's right. Quote, Carter's comments mirror the conclusions of a Princeton University study released last year. Author Martin Gillens found that ordinary citizens have virtually no influence over what their government does in the United States. Meanwhile, economic elites and interest groups, especially those representing business, have a substantial degree of influence. So what we're talking about here, this is political science research over decades following the American political system and the legislation that we get implemented. And they found very simply and very clearly what the American people want, what the middle class and the poor want, it has a 0% effect on what policy we actually get. But where is there a very high correlation? Whatever the rich want. Whatever the corporations want, whatever Wall Street wants, whatever the billionaires want. What they want gets implemented all the time. What the middle class and the poor want, it's not even like, hey, 36% of the time you get what you want, which would still be abysmal because that's not even 50% in what's supposed to be a representative democracy. But no, it's not even that. 0%. 0%. So only under a system that is objectively an oligarchy can we have a situation where, for example, 80% of the American people want a minimum wage increase. Majority of Democrats, independents, and Republicans, 80%, over 80% of the country wants a minimum wage increase. We haven't gotten it. How can that be? I mean, that's an open and shut case. 80% and you can't implement it in what's supposed to be a constitutional republic and a representative democracy? That doesn't make any sense. How about over 90% of the American people said, let's just do simple, a universal background check on guns. There's no violation of the Second Amendment here. That's absolutely clear. We're just talking about basic, moderate, vanilla background checks to try to limit the number of gun deaths. Couldn't even get that. Over 90% of the American people wanted it. Couldn't get it. Why couldn't we get it? You know why we couldn't get it. Because they're not listening to us. They don't give a fuck what we think. You know who they're listening to, right? Well, the NRA gives money. The gun manufacturers give money to the NRA. The NRA gives money to the politicians, and they give it to the Republican politicians specifically with the understanding, hey, this means that if anything comes up, any kind of gun reform, you block it. So in reality, we have a situation where the people in America who should be the last people to make gun policy, the people who make the guns, they have a profit incentive in this whole race. They have a horse in this race. They're the people who make the policy. So the people who would lose money if there's some kind of gun reform, they're the ones who say, okay, well, we don't want any gun reform. Yeah, we know you don't want any gun reform, but that's why you shouldn't be making the policies, because you have a direct financial incentive against any kind of gun reform. So it doesn't matter what's good for the country. It only matters what's good for your bottom line. And because they're the ones influencing the political process with money, they get what they want. By the same token, Wall Street gives an untold amount of money to the politicians, and then what ends up happening?
Well, when there's a collapse, when there's a stock market crash because of bad decisions they made and a lack of regulation, who gets bailed out? Wall Street gets bailed out. Because they paid their bribes, they did their donations. So they did legal corruption. They paid the politicians, and the politicians know the deal. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. It's human nature, man. It's not like these politicians are inherently inferior to you and me, or they're more evil than you and me. They're just functioning within a system that pushes them in the direction of always paying back the people who pay them money. Of course, it's a matter of where they get their financing from for their campaigns. And right now, they get it from private interests. Who has the most money? Who are the most powerful private interests? The rich. Billionaires, Wall Street people, lobbyists, multinational corporations. So clearly you're going to have a government that reflects their interests. You have to get the cancer of the system out so you make it so that the politicians better represent the American people. And the way to do that, the only way to do that, is to get the money out of the system. Now, people are going about it all different ways. I support every way in which people want to go about it, but I happen to think some ways are more effective than other ways. If you put a law on the books, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be enforced, and it could also be repealed from one administration to the next administration. But don't get me wrong, look, at a local level or state level, you want to do laws like that, by all means, go right ahead. I just don't think on a federal level that that's the most effective way to combat the issue of money in politics. I happen to agree with Wolfpack. TYT is, of course, working on that. And the idea behind Wolfpack is you get a constitutional amendment to get money out of politics, and you make it so that it's just illegal. You can't have private donors give money to politicians. It runs on a system of what's called clean elections. So public financing of elections, there's some sort of process to get into the election in the first place, and then when you get in, you get equal funds, and then it's simply a debate of ideas as opposed to whose donors can pay the most money to prop up their candidate and run more ads and get their name out there more and over 90% of the time win. In under a system where Bernie Sanders has the same amount of money as Jeb Bush and gets totally equal airtime to Jeb Bush, who do you think's going to win? Jeb Bush would get fucking no votes. Even Jeb's family would be like, I don't know, this guy's kind of douchey. People are going to vote for the people who have the better message if the message is spread equally because they have equal money, they have equal funds, and they're not going to have anybody else to represent other than the American people because those will be the ones giving them the money. Now, understand, man, I would love it if we can have a real debate and a real conversation with, for example, conservative libertarians who are actually libertarian. You know, I would love it if we had zero establishment candidates. But as of right now, who are the front runners? The establishment candidates. Why are they the front runners? Because they're going to raise the most money. So the media takes them more seriously. They run more advertisements. They get their name out there more. They have higher name recognition. And you know the way it goes. They're much more likely to get elected. So we got to get the cancer out of the system. The cancer is the private money. Let's get rid of all these corrupt assholes, man. It's very simple. So we have to fight. We have to win on this, because if we don't win on this, then we will continue to be an oligarchy. We'll continue to be a kleptocracy. We'll continue to be a corporatocracy. And the government will continue to do none of what you and I want, and that's unacceptable. Okay. Let's do one more here before we take our first break, and it'll be Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton released an ad called Dorothy, and it's getting mixed reviews online. My review is not going to be mixed. I have strong opinions on this. Check it out.
When I think about why I'm doing this, I think about my mother, Dorothy. She was abandoned by her parents at the age of 8, sent from Chicago to L.A. to live with grandparents who didn't want her. But people showed her kindness, gave her a chance. Like the teacher who saw my mother had no money for food and started bringing her extra from home, whispering, "You know, Dorothy, I just brought too much food today." She went to work in somebody else's home at age 14, and it opened her eyes. For the first time, she saw parents who loved and cared for their children, and that's the kind of loving family she provided for us. When she needed a champion, someone was there. I think about all the Dorothys all over America who fight for their families, who never give up. That's why I'm doing this, That's why I've always done this, for all the Dorothys.
All right, I'm going to be the curmudgeonly asshole here. I'm going to be the snarky, skeptical, angry grandpa-like character here. But that was absolute, total, utter horseshit. I mean, that's like the sleazy, political pandering 101. See, here's the problem with Hillary Clinton. When she talks, I don't believe her. I don't believe what you're saying. It's obviously politically calculated and poll-tested, and her staff crafted the message, and clearly she's reading off cue cards as she tells this story, because God forbid she actually talks about her mother from her heart and says what she really feels. She has to go off the cue cards. And you can tell, by the way, I had to watch this clip 3 or 4 times when I was editing it in order to play it here for you guys, or when I was clipping it out. And you can tell, like, the inflection that she puts over certain words is like, oh, she should have had, like, a comma there in her mind and she didn't have it there, so it, like, was a clunky sentence the way she said it. Like, everything about it, the cheesy music, it just smacks of insincerity. And furthermore, what the fuck does this have to do with being President of the United States of America? Hillary, I got news for you. I don't give a goddamn about your mom, your brother, your sister, your great-great-uncle. I don't give a fuck about them. I care about what you're going to do for the American people, what you're going to do for the country. Don't give me anecdotes and platitudes and cliches about, oh, and then this happened in my personal life, and here's an old picture. I have a family. Don't you have a family? We both have families. Maybe you should vote for me then. Are you buying this, guys? Are you buying this? Stop. When I listen to somebody like Elizabeth Warren, when I listen to somebody like Bernie Sanders, I get the sense that, and I get the feeling that, and based on their actions, too, I get this, not just from looking at them, but they care about this shit. They care about the issues. They care about the facts. They care about policy substance, which is why you only ever hear them talking about policy substance. You never hear them talking about the personalities of the other people involved in the race who are against them, who are their opponents. You never hear them talking about personal things that happened in their own lives. When I was in eighth grade, my girlfriend broke up with me. I don't give a fuck. Why would I care about that? I don't care about that. Politics is not about, hey, you're a celebrity that just happens to get to make important decisions about everybody's life. No, it's supposed to just be about the decisions you make that affect people's lives and crafting a better society. So in the process of crafting a better society, I don't care if you grew up with no father or no mother, or you had 19 brothers and sisters, or you had 0 brothers and sisters. All I care about is, what the fuck are you going to do on the issue of climate change? What the fuck are you going to do on the issue of money and politics? What the fuck are you going to do when it comes to the minimum wage? What the fuck are you going to do when it comes to unionization? What the fuck are you going to do about the TPP? What the fuck are you going to do about the Keystone XL pipeline? How many of those issues were brought up in this ad? 0, 0, none of them. I walk away from this ad knowing nothing, none of the substance of what Hillary Clinton is supposed to do. It's fucking just pandering, sleazy pandering, and it insults my intelligence. The Democrats are supposed to be the better party that actually gives a shit about the details. But what do? Trot out the emotional horse shit. This is the Democratic version of when a Republican in an ad holds the fucking Bible, has a cross behind him, and then you see him shooting a gun or some shit. Ha ha, I'm with you. I like guns. I like Jesus. Vote for me. Ha ha, Billy Bob, Jim Bob, Jim Bob. Hillary Clinton's like, oh, my mother, oh, she was an amazing person. I care so deeply about her, and her name was Dorothy, and I care about all the other Dorothys out there. See what I did there? See what I did there? Her name is Dorothy. There are other Dorothys. It's like symbolic for everybody else. See what I did? It's not serious. You're not a serious person. You're treating us like the year is 1984, and you can still pull at the emotional fucking heartstrings, and people aren't out there really dealing with healthcare bills. People aren't out there really dealing with joblessness. People aren't out there dealing with all types of stuff. We're fighting right now in 6 different countries. 6 different countries we're fighting in one way or another, whether it's drone strikes, whether it's an all-out fighting on the ground or bombing or whatever. We're fighting in 6 different countries. Nothing. No mention of that. But Kyle, it's one end. Maybe she'll make more political ads later. Great. But this one should have never been in the conversation, because there are a trillion real issues to talk about. And instead, you show me old pictures and read off a fucking cue card in a cold way, talking about your mother and pretending like you care about everybody else as much as you care about your mother. You fucking don't. You don't. You're lying. It's not true. I don't believe you. So forgive me for going over the top on this, but you know what? I was mad when I first saw it, but what pissed me off more is that when I read comments on it, it was mixed opinions. And I was like, how is anybody mixed on this? To me, it's insane that anybody, oh, this is why I love Hillary. Oh, you have my vote. Oh, my God, how silly are you? You call yourself a Democrat, and meanwhile, you're walking around like, oh, who can tug at my heartstrings more? I watched Bambi one time and cried. Can I vote for Bambi somewhere? Can I do a write-in of Bambi? That's not the way you make decisions. That's the way intelligent people make rational decisions in the real world. We got to graduate, man. We got to get over this shit. I can't believe anybody has mixed opinions on that. Look, those are not my kinds of Democrats. Okay, I'm not a Democratic loyalist. I don't go, oh, who's the Democrat that polls best? Who's the strongest? That's who I'm going to vote for. I'll rent my brain out to that person. Fuck that, man. Fuck that. Especially since Hillary Clinton's taken untold amounts of money from Wall Street and the corporate class and billionaires. I'm sick of it. I'm done with it. We already know, man. We already know. Wall Street says they don't even care when Hillary does anti-Wall Street rhetoric because they say, look, we know that even though she's saying that stuff, she's going to help us when she gets in office. So if Wall Street knows that and they don't even care when she speaks out against them because they know it's fake, why the fuck would I vote for her? If I'm going to get basically President Obama slash Bill Clinton part two or part three, and it's going to be even further right-wing on that because overseas she's even more hawkish than those guys, then what the fuck? Why would I vote for you? It's not just the commercial, which is why I don't like her. It's her actions. It's her policy substance. Okay? Way too corporate, way too pro-establishment, way too sleazy politician. And in my opinion, this ad proves it. All right, let me take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into a lot of substance. We got foreign policy stuff galore, and then Mike Huckabee makes an ass of himself yet again. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Gotta do something, man. Got all these hot cars, hot friends. Ain't got nobody to share with, baby. You know what I mean? Let's go.
Hey, girl. How you doing? My name's Charlie. Let's make a listen. I was wondering if I could take you out. Show you a good time. Invite you to the house. Here is my number. Girl, you can call me. And don't forget, hey, the name is Charlie. What's all of this fortune? What am I doing single? Sometimes I tell myself, man, get out and mingle. You don't have to be alone, you need someone to love. But being famous, sometimes it's hard to find someone to trust. But here with that this time, I'm gonna treat myself. Being in love is good for you, yeah. It's time to share this fortune and fame with someone else. Now that I'm in this club, I might as well.
Hey, girl. How you doing?
My name's Charlie.
Let's make Wilson.
I was wondering if I could take you out. Show you a good time. Invite you to the
house. Here is my number.
Girl, you can call me. And don't forget,
no.
My name is Charlie. Now I ain't got nobody to ride in my new coupe with. I got nobody to chill with on the weekend. This is just a house, just a one makes it a home. Love don't count me out, cause I'm so all alone.
But here with that this time, I'm gonna treat my thing.
Being in love is good for your head.
It's time to share this fortune and fame with someone else.
Now that I'm in this club, I might as well.
Hey girl,
how you doing?
My name is Charlie.
Hey girl,
how you doing?
My name's Charlie.
back, people. All right.
Now we go to some war profiteers. So it gets super ethereal, you guys. Who knows what that's from? If you don't know what that's from, stop listening to my show. It's mandatory to watch that episode of South Park. Okay. Kate Brannon of the Daily Beast has a very illuminating article out today about the business of war, and it really puts into perspective the tremendous benefits that some contractors are getting because of ISIS and because of the fight against ISIS. So here's what they say. Quote, "The war against ISIS isn't going so great, with the self-appointed terror group standing up to a year of U.S. airstrikes in Syria and Iraq, but that hasn't kept defense contractors from doing rather well amidst the fighting. Lockheed Martin has received orders for thousands of more Hellfire missiles. AM General is busy supplying Iraq with 160 American-built Humvee vehicles, while General Dynamics is selling the country millions of dollars worth of tank ammunition. SOS International, a family-owned business whose corporate headquarters are located in New York City, is one of the biggest players on the ground in Iraq, employing the most Americans in the country after the U.S. Embassy. On the company's board of advisors, former Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, famous neocon, considered to be one of the architects of the invasion of Iraq, and Paul Butler, a former special assistant to Pentagon Chief Donald Rumsfeld. The company, which goes by SOSI, says on its website that the contracts that's been awarded for work in Iraq in 2015 have a total value of more than $400 million. They include a $40 million contract to provide everything from meals to perimeter security to emergency fire and medical services at Iraq's Besmaya compound, one of the sites where U.S. troops are training Iraqi soldiers. The Army awarded SOSI a separate $100 million contract in late June for similar services at Camp Taji. The Pentagon expects that contract to last through June 2018. So they're not even pretending like we'll be out of Iraq or Syria before 2018. They're like, here's a contract that lasts that long. Don't worry, we're going to be there. And they go on to explain that there are about 3,500 U.S. military advisors on the ground in Iraq. By the way, I'm sure the same kind of advisors we had in Vietnam when they were advisors slash, of course, they're fighting on the ground. Of course, they're doing combat. They say they're advisors because it makes it politically convenient to come home and say, us? We're not in a war. We just have advisors on the ground. It's not a hot war. No, of course it's a hot war. Who the fuck are you kidding? But we have that many soldiers on the ground, but there are 6,300 private contractors there. And, by the way, in Afghanistan, remember they were making a big stink about, well, we're going to keep 10,000 soldiers there. This fact even escaped me. I didn't even know about this until today. So we have 10,000 soldiers there and 30,000 contractors still there. And they have the nerve to say, oh, we ended the war a long time ago. We just have 40,000 Americans that are permanently sitting there and fighting. That would be a war. Imagine if China was like, no, come on, America. We're not in a war with you. I just put 40,000 Chinese fighters in Alabama, and every once in a while we go out and we kill some people. What's the big deal? Isn't that a war? Isn't that a war? Would the U.S. look at it like that? Oh, no. Good point. We're not angry. We're not going to fight back. It's not a war. We got you. 40,000 people, they just kill every once in a while. Ah, what are you going to do? Now, here's a line from the article that sent chills up my spine. Quote, "It allows us to maintain the facade of no boots on the ground while at the same time growing our footprint." So as we say to everybody in America, oh, wars are over, bro, calm down, no big deal, take it easy. What are we doing as we say that? We're like, okay, keep some troops in there, but now send more fucking contractors in there. So in other words, the wars are never over. War is now officially big business. And in the article, they go on to explain how companies are vying for these contracts. And how do they vie for them? That's the important part, because the devil's in the details. They vie for them with political bribes. So whichever defense contractor pays the politicians more money, those politicians go, oh, after a long, thorough review, we've decided to go in this direction. with the company that gave us the most bribes. But, of course, they don't say that. They couch it as if it's official business and as if these are serious people. They're not serious. They're all fucking corrupt assholes. Now, understand, man, and as I've said time and time again, and this is what separates me from people like Alex Jones or conspiracy theorists, it's not like these are evil people who are more evil than you and I, and they're part of a fucking lizard gang or the NWO or some shit. No. These are people who are just responding to a system of incentives. So they know the way Washington works if they've been there for a month or longer, and they get it. It's a wink and a nod. Hey, whenever people pay you, it's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. And it just so happens that when you marry this imperialist do-gooder mindset with political bribery, and you have defense contractors that are super fucking powerful, the end result is what? Rampant, widespread imperialism and occupation. And this entire time, I'm not kidding when I say this, the people in Washington, they don't think that what they're doing is wrong. And that goes for the neocons as much as it goes for the Democrats, who are also engaged in this nonsense. They don't, when they look in the mirror when they wake up in the morning, they don't go, oh my God, you fucking evil bastard. You think Cheney says that when he looks in the mirror in the morning? Bill Clinton? None of these guys think that when they look in the mirror in the morning. They go, I'm doing what's right. I am the world policeman. We should be the world policeman. We're keeping order. Process of that, oh, hey, look, a lot of people are getting rich. Whatevs, dude. I guess that's the windfall for being the good guys. And, you know, in Afghanistan, for example, they're like, hey, we're already there. Might as well take some of these minerals because there's billions of dollars of mineral wealth here. Hey, opium's involved. Might as well protect those fields and make some money off that. Hey, we're in Iraq. Oh, look at that. We have oil here. Well, we've already been here for really long, and we liberated them. I take a little bit of the oil or something here. Just give us a little cut or something like that. So what I'm trying to say is it's not like all these guys are evil. They know they're evil. They're acting on their evil impulses. You just have a perfect storm of poor incentives mixed with American exceptionalism, that ideology which has been poisoned into the minds of most Americans at this point. So when you mix those things together, what you have is imperialism. That's what comes out the other end of it, and America is no different than any other imperialism throughout history, any other imperialist country throughout history. So when you look at the Romans, they say, oh, we're conquering the savages, and we're enlightening them. We're bringing enlightened proper values to the savages. In reality, what were they doing? They were fucking slaughtering people left and right and taking over territory and conquering people and occupying them, of course. Every single empire, Roman Empire, Greek Empire, Malian Empire, Ottoman Empire, you name the empire, it's all the same. We're the good people by definition. We're spreading our values, and it's the right thing to do. And I'm sure that they said to themselves back then, oh, we're the world policemen. We're trying to keep order by keeping everybody else down and doing all the wrong things. America's doing the same thing now. We're the world policemen. We're trying to keep order. And in the process, a lot of people are getting really, really fucking rich, and we're taking a lot of natural resources, and we're, you know, repressing a lot of people. But hey, what are you going to do? We have good intent. We're the good guys. Whatever, bro. Is everybody rich and happy here? Are all these greedy capitalists rich and fat and happy? Good, good, good. Sad state of affairs, dog. Sad state of affairs. Okay. Now, sticking with foreign policy. I'm not done. There are two new foreign policy reports out today that are very concerning, one involving civilian casualties and another involving what the U.S. plans to do moving forward. So first, the Associated Press is reporting the following, quote, U.S.-led airstrikes targeting the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria likely have killed hundreds of civilians, a report by an independent monitoring group said Monday. The report by Air Wars said it believed 57 specific strikes killed at least 459 civilians and caused 48 suspected friendly fire deaths. Okay, now, previous news or other reports, I should say, made clear that about 75% of bombing missions return without having dropped a bomb. And the reason for that is they're trying to avoid civilian deaths. So they're just clearly not doing a very good job of that. But here's the conclusion of the report, and this is the most important part. Quote, almost all claims of non-combatant deaths from alleged coalition strikes emerged within 24 hours, with graphic images of reported victims often widely disseminated, In this context, the present coalition policy of downplaying or denying all claims of non-combatant fatalities makes little sense and risks handing the Islamic State group and other forces a powerful propaganda tool. Ah, so that's really, really important. So what they're saying is, in other words, the civilian casualties are a huge recruiting tool for ISIS. And in the grand scheme of things, when we kill any civilians, it becomes counterproductive. So you bomb ISIS, and you know, you may kill some people that are actually in ISIS, but if you kill even one civilian along with that, you make it so that you just created hundreds of new recruits, which links back to a report we covered on Friday where they said exactly that. They said the Islamic State is able to replenish their forces quicker than the U.S. and the international community are able to kill their forces. Because all they have to do is show, you know, hey, look at these civilians that were killed by the big bad Americans, the evil satanic crusaders. So come on, come fight for your religion, come fight for, you know, the Islamic State, or come fight for to get revenge on these barbarians. It becomes you do their work for them when you kill civilians. So they're very clear in the report, and they say, you got to find a way to fucking stop that, because you're not going to win in the battlefield of ideas if you still kill civilians and you strengthen their message. We saw the same thing happen in Iraq in the Bush era, for example. You made it so, and in Afghanistan too, you made it so that when you killed civilians, you made the Taliban more popular and their numbers increased. In fact, there were reports at the time which said the war on terror is creating more terrorists. So there's got to be a better way to do this. There's got to be a more effective way, a more efficient way to do this. Like you guys have heard me say before, I'm not in the camp that says you can't fight ISIS at all. I think people should fight ISIS. I don't want America to get involved because we already fucked it up from day one, going all the way back to the 2003 invasion of Iraq. So I'd have the international community do it. I would have America back the fuck off. I wouldn't even have America arm the people who are doing the killing, because we know from Yemen being bombed by Saudi Arabia that when you have American-made bombs, even if America is not the ones that are firing them, people go, oh, fuck America. Death to America. So we shouldn't arm all these different regimes. When it comes to the international community, they should be the ones to solely fight ISIS. And I, as you guys heard me say the other day, I would specifically attack their oil fields, because I think once you cut off the revenue source completely, it's only a matter of time until they run out of money and the whole thing collapses. So, and they're focusing on that a little bit now, but I would put all of my efforts there. And again, I'd have the international community do it, not America, because we fucked up from day one and we're only breeding more and more hatred. Because even when we're careful with how we drop our bombs, we still kill at least 459 civilians, and that's a perfect recruiting tool for ISIS to get more people to join. So I don't want anything that happens to be counterproductive, and it is counterproductive. And I think, unfortunately, definitely the Republicans here in America, but even the Democrats, walk a little bit too much into this trap of we need to do more, we need to get involved more, and then what happens? Oops, look at that, we killed civilians and we made the problem worse. Okay, so that's story number one. Now that you know that, here's the second foreign policy story from today, which is equally as important. Reuters says, quote, the United States has decided to allow airstrikes to defend Syrian rebels trained by the U.S. military from any attackers, even if the enemies hail from forces loyal to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Oh, boy. So what does that mean? What it means is mission creep all over again. This is what happened in Afghanistan. This is what happened in Iraq. Now it's happening in Syria, too. And this is precisely what George Bush did wrong in Iraq. What do we do there that had all the liberals screaming, oh my God, you idiot, you're getting us in the middle of a civil war. The Sunnis and the Shias are having a civil war, and you want to get in the middle of it and try to police it? That's not going to work. What, are you fucking crazy? That's insanity. That has nothing to do with us. You get us involved in that, we're just wasting American lives, and we're wasting American tax dollars, which conservatives should be furious over. So now we're doing the same thing, we're just doing it in Syria. And now it's President Obama doing it, who's supposed to be smarter, and not George W. Bush. Yeah, great, okay, the Sunnis are fighting Assad, who's a Shia leader in Syria, and it's a broader Sunni-Shia war, it's part of a broader Sunni-Shia war, and we're like, okay, great, let's get involved there, and let's bomb other Sunnis who we don't like who are bad, because ISIS is fighting Assad too. So we're going to try to bomb ISIS, who's fighting Assad, and we're going to try to bomb Assad's troops as well. Anybody who fucks with our Sunnis who we like, who are totally moderate, trust me. It's not like we ever funded Sunnis in the past who we thought were moderate, and it turned out they weren't. Oh, that's exactly what happened, and it happened time and time again. Look at Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan armed the Mujahideen because they were fighting the Soviet Union. We were so anti-communist that we funded Islamic radicals, the Mujahideen. And what ended up happening? They broke up into the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and they fought us with the weapons that we fucking gave them. We gave them the weapons. It's the same thing we're doing now. President Obama and all these micromanagers in Washington, they're like, okay, here's what we're going to do. They think they're so smart, but they're fucking stupid. They're like, all right, let's arm a third group, a moderate Sunni group, and this moderate Sunni group will not be in alignment with ISIS or al-Nusra Front or any of the jihadists fighting Assad, and this group won't be in line with Assad and the Shias who are fighting on his behalf. Brilliant! Except that's exactly what you tried to do in Iraq, and it failed. And in Iraq, you did it with the Shias and not the Sunnis. So you toppled Saddam, who was a relatively secular Sunni, a Ba'athist. You kicked all the Ba'athists out of power, and you looked for Maliki, a moderate Shia, and you put him in power, and then the Shias repressed the Sunnis. Now you want to do the reverse in Syria. Assad's in power, who's a Shia. You want to get a moderate Sunni, put him in power, and then and then they'll repress the Shias, of course, naturally, as always what happens. And then, yet again, you've made more enemies, you pissed off more people, and you made the problem worse. By the way, hey, assholes, who the fuck do you think is going to replace Assad? So, okay, you get rid of Assad. Then what? Then what are you going to do? People in Washington are like, me no thinky that far. Exactly! You didn't fucking think that far! You're going to turn Syria into a state exactly like Iraq! Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Syria is a great place right now. Of course not. There's a brutal civil war going on. I just don't want America to be involved because it has bupkis to do with us. Why would I want to spend my tax dollars to fight a fucking war in Syria? I got nothing to do with Syria. Syria ain't got nothing to do with me. Fuck that. And I don't want a single American life dying there. I don't want a single cent for a single gun going into the hands of a Sunni rebel who may or may not be ideologically aligned with ISIS. They might tell us otherwise, but they take our weapons, and then who the fuck knows what kind of government they would set up. What are you trying to do, set up Saudi Arabia 2.0 in Syria? So you turn Syria from Shia to Sunni, and it becomes a Wahhabist state, but since there are Wahhabists who we handpick, we think is going to be better, and we think they're going to listen to us? You don't know what the fuck you're doing. You're playing with fire in the Middle East. Every time you think you're going to make it better, you make it worse. History has shown that. But what do you do? What does every American regime do when they get in power? Fuck it, we're going to try it. We'll fix everything and we'll micromanage. Or not! Or how about you don't do that? How about you get out of there? How about you let the region do whatever the fuck it's going to do, and all you have to worry about is make sure America is never directly threatened, and you're good! How about that? But I know that's an idea that's unacceptable in Washington, because establishment wisdom 101 is, come on, the military-industrial complex, these contractors need to make more money no matter what, so let's just get involved in more wars and arm more people, and then we'll make everybody fat and rich and happy here while the rest of the world turns to shit. Yeah, that'll never come back to bite us in the ass. All right, let me do one more story real quick. So last week, we discussed a brutal terror attack on Palestinians, which left a one-year-old baby dead. Jewish settlers firebombed two Palestinian homes, and at the time, Netanyahu came out and condemned the attack, and he quite clearly called it Jewish terrorism, and he said that he has, quote, zero tolerance for attacks that are like that. Now, don't get me wrong, it's certainly positive that he did that, but there is a hint of irony in that comment, which we'll get to in a little bit. But over the weekend, the but came. And what I mean by that is he condemns the terrorism, but there's got to be a catch in there somewhere. So the Times of Israel reports on this. They say, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday lashed out at Mahmoud Abbas, accusing the Palestinian Authority president of failing to condemn acts of Palestinian terrorism. Quote, "We are determined to vigorously fight manifestations of hate, fanaticism, and terrorism from whatever side," Netanyahu said. "This is not a struggle by this or that faction. This is a matter of basic humanity and is at the foundation of our enlightened Jewish values. We deplore and condemn these murderers. We will pursue them to the end. They name public squares after the murderers of children. This distinction cannot be blurred or covered up." Okay, so number one, that's not true that Abbas never condemns terrorism. He does condemn terror attacks, and he did so just last year in 2014. And number two, even when Netanyahu is condemning what he calls Jewish terrorism, he has to say, "But come on, am I right? They're really the savages." Know what I'm saying? Can you just not? How about that? Can you not? And by the way, he wants to act like, "Oh, this is such an isolated incident. This never happens ever. I can't believe, oh, Jewish terrorism, terrible. I'm condemning it this once, so everybody shut the fuck up and back off me," when it happens thousands of other times and we're more silent on it. There's been over the past 10 years, there's been thousands of attacks by Jewish settlers on Palestinians. Okay? And there is a quick and easy solution to that. Do a two-state deal, get them off that land, and build a giant wall at the 67 borders. But do you want to do that? Of course you don't want to do that. You said no to that quite clearly when that deal was proposed at the UN through Jordan by the Palestinians. And you said, not only am I saying no to this, it's anti-Semitic that the Palestinians even proposed it. It's anti-Semitic that they want peace? That's a strange claim. But let's break this down more specifically. So he says, "We are determined to vigorously fight manifestations of hate, fanaticism, and terrorism from whatever side." What did he leave out there?
Unless I'm the one that does the killing and the terrorism.
What? What? Oh, I didn't say that part? Oh, that part, that was implicit in what I was trying to say. You have to remember, guys, it was the last incursion into Gaza, not me speaking here, but the international community speaking here, the UN and investigative reporters speaking here. They said, while Hamas absolutely committed war crimes, by the way, we totally condemn that, nobody should kill civilians ever, they also said Israel committed war crimes, Netanyahu committed war crimes. Why? They attacked schools, they attacked hospitals, they attacked kids who were playing on a beach with no Hamas around them whatsoever. 75% civilian death rate, over 500 children were killed. By the way, there's your irony too. Oh, this is terrorism, Palestinian babies being killed. Well, that guy killed one. You killed over 500. Oh, but I'm Benjamin Netanyahu. You can't question my intent. My intent was fantastic. Was your intent fantastic when you bombed the schools? And when you bombed the hospitals? And when you bombed the one power plant in Gaza? Which left everybody without electricity? Was your intent good then? Is your intent good no matter what the civilian casualty death rate is? If it's 75%, if it's 100%, is it still good? At what point do you say, intent might be a little iffy here? What's the bar? Once you get to 96.3% civilian death rate, well, then you can question his intent. But before then, come on now. They're the savages. We're the good people, even if we kill all these civilians. Then when he said, this is not a struggle by this or that faction, this is a matter of basic humanity and is the foundation of our enlightened Jewish values. Again, what's he leaving out there? Well, it's our enlightened Jewish values, except for that one value we hold, which is occupation, which we're doing and continuing to do, and we're not planning on stopping. But outside of that, enlightened Jewish values. Look, man, I get it. Don't get me wrong. In the Middle East, domestically, who has a better internal policy to their own people? Sure, Israel has a better internal policy. The bar's pretty fucking low to begin with either way, though. We're talking about some surrounding states that do have one version or another of Sharia implemented, brutally repressive internally. You know, they'll arrest you, as we covered a story recently, they arrested somebody for questioning the existence of God. Obviously, domestically, Israel is internally more free than areas surrounding it. Nobody's denying that. And we applaud that internally they're better. But externally, they're worse because they're occupying. They are the aggressors. They took the Palestinian land and now they are keeping it. So if you're going to say, hey, we have enlightened Jewish values, at least be honest and say we're enlightened in many ways except when it comes to occupation. There, we're the problem. We're the bad guys. We're the ones that are fucked up. We're the ones that are acting illiberal in that way. You know, I've heard this argument before. Oh, but only democracy in the Middle East. They stand for liberal values. Israel stands for more liberal values. Except for when they don't and it comes to occupation and they're worse. So don't tell me I'm going to use illiberal values to justify setting up liberal values, because that is self-defeating. That's a contradiction. That doesn't make any sense, because then you are acting illiberally in at least this one respect, and I'm not going to overlook that. It's like, oh, we're liberal in every other way, so just disregard it when we occupy people and take away their territory. No, I'm not going to overlook that. That wouldn't make any fucking sense to overlook that. So, look, it's obviously the right thing to come out and condemn the terrorism. But my message to Netanyahu is, if you really do care about dead Palestinian babies, stop creating them. Whether you're doing it on purpose or, oh, it was an accident when we bombed the school and when we bombed, the hospital and when we killed over 500 children, whether it was an accident or not, either way, don't drop any bombs, and perhaps that'll fix the situation. Don't get me wrong. If there's an instance of Hamas terrorists shooting rockets at the civilian population in Israel, would I be in favor of some sort of special forces attack to take out the Hamas bad guys? Absolutely. But that's called precision attacks. Not, hey, we killed 75% civilians, over 2,000 people dead, and oh, praise me, because we're the good guys. Fuck off. I'm not going to do that. So, yeah, condemn the Jewish terrorists and the settler terrorism, but do something to stop it, namely get a two-state solution. And also, you shouldn't participate in killing Palestinian babies. How about that? Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Mike Huckabee made an ass of himself on the campaign trail yet again. We have that and much, much more. Stay right there, guys.
About to check my message. No one has called but my homies and some bill collectors. Said your love brings somebody wants to borrow money. I two-way her, she don't hit me back, something is funny. I called her mother's house and asked her had she seen my baby. Rolled my six around looking for that missing lady. Got back in, turned the TV on and called the news. Then I put my hand on my head, cause I'm so confused. And then I turned the TV down, cause I thought I heard a squeaky smile. Something's going on upstairs, yeah. Cause I know nobody else lives here. As I get closer to the stairway, all I hear, boy, in my ears, screaming out. Your contagious, touch me, baby, give me what you got. And a man said, sexy lady, drive me crazy, drive me wild. I just can't believe this. I ran downstairs, looked in the closet, looking for that. Said a prayer, cause only God knows what I'm gonna do. What I saw was enough to drive a preacher wild. I'm in the hall, contemplating, not in my own damn house. Who would have thought she was sleeping with another man? The download happening to me all over again. And then I turned the TV down, cause I know I heard a squeaky sound. Something going on up there, upstairs. Cause I'm knowing no one else lives here. As I get closer to the stairways, all I hear. And then I hear my baby's voice in my ear. Screaming, you're contagious.
Yeah. about to be. How did I get into this? Should have never came home with this. Don't I dirty woman, back to where you come from.
But anyway,
but sleep back.
Alright, we're back, guys.
My left eye was twitching, and it felt really weird. Perhaps I've been poisoned by Marco Rubio. I don't know why Marco Rubio came to my mind when I said that. Alright, let's go to Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee made an ass of himself on the campaign trail yet again. So on Thursday, he was in Iowa, and he was asked by the press if he would consider using the National Guard or the FBI to shut down abortion clinics. I'm sure you can guess what his response was. He said, quote, "I will not pretend there is nothing we can do to stop this. All American citizens should be protected. We'll see if I get to be president." Now, he then went on to praise Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln as his inspiration, saying that they were, quote, previous presidents who had defied Supreme Court rulings. This guy's incredible. You would think that if a politician was to be brave and defy the Supreme Court, it might be on something like campaign finance. Bernie Sanders is kind of already doing that, by the way. He didn't set up a super PAC. He said, I'm going to forego having a super PAC. I'll raise less money, but I think I can win if I just have a principled campaign and really try to get out there as much as I can and get the message across. See, that would be a principled example of defying the Supreme Court. Or defying the Supreme Court, you know, if they were to uphold slavery or segregation or something, and you say, no, I'm gonna defy this. It doesn't make you virtuous to defy the Supreme Court if it comes to something like gay marriage, how they just, you know, allowed it and said it's constitutional. It doesn't make you brave to say, I'm going to fight that. I'm not going to listen to that. That makes you a douche if you disagree with them on that one. If you disagree with them on Roe v. Wade, which is, by the way, a very moderate decision in terms of the kind of policy it sets up for abortion all across the U.S., it, you know, you're allowed to ban late-term abortions and things of that nature. It's like kind of like in the middle. It's all the woman's choice up until in the middle. So very moderate. But in Mike Huckabee's mind, no, if you don't ban it from the second you're done having sex, well, you're the extremist. I'll defy the Supreme Court. I might send the National Guard. So here we have somebody running for president who says he might send the National Guard, he might send federal troops to abortion clinics all around the country to shut them down by force. Okay, son, that would not be you acting as president of the United States of America. That would be you acting as a dictator. This is like the fourth or fifth or sixth time we've heard Mike Huckabee say something, and the only possible takeaway is, oh, he doesn't want to be president, he wants to be a dictator. I mean, time and time and time, Lindsey Graham did the same thing, by the way. There are many issues where he says, no, I would ignore all the checks and balances in our system, and I would just override it and do whatever I want. Okay, but you are not allowed to do that. If you're running for president of the U.S., you should know a thing or two about how the U.S. functions. But see, the thing is, he might know, he might not know, but either way, he doesn't give a fuck. Even if he does know, he's like, I don't care. I'm just gonna shut it down. In fact, he's telling us, I don't care what the Supreme Court says. I don't care if anybody tries to stop me. I'm going to shut it down. That's deeply disturbing. And keep in mind, man, every time we talk about Mike Huckabee, people always forget to bring up the elephant in the room, which is him. No, I'm kidding. That was a weight joke. Let me stop. No, he says that the U.S. should base its laws and the Constitution should be based on God's law because he doesn't want man's law to override God's law. And he said when he ran last time, he said, there are people in this race who do not want to change the Constitution. I, for one, want to, because it should reflect God's law, not man's law. Man's law is irrelevant in the face of God's law. So here we have somebody who's telling you, hey, I'm a fascist theocrat. Hey, I'm in favor of a Christian theocracy. I am the Christian Taliban. He's running on that platform. For anybody to vote for him when he's showing you his true colors like that, that person would have to be un-American. Because Mike Huckabee, what he stands for by definition is un-American because it changes everything that's good about the country, namely the biggest thing, which is secularism, being the first official secular government in the world. Mike Huckabee wants to take that away because his opinion is that his faith is reality, and he wants to force that on everybody else. And, of course, the final twist of irony here is what? He doesn't even know what his Bible says about abortion. We've covered it before. I've given you the exact quotes from the Bible. If anything, the Bible is pro-abortion. There's one part of the Bible where God performs abortions. Now, last time I said that, there were Christian websites that got all over me. Lib radio host says God performs abortions. But did you not see exactly what I said? I gave you the literal biblical quotes. I quoted the scripture to you. There's a part where God goes through Samaria and rips out the fetuses from the women's stomach. That would be God performing abortion. You can call it something else, but that is what it is. And there's another part of the Bible where if your wife cheats on you, you're supposed to give her what's called bitter water. Now, bitter water just means it's like a toxic potion or something like that. And it, when she drinks it, if she miscarries, a.k.a. has an abortion, well, that means that the kid was not your kid. It was from the guy she cheated with, and it's good that the baby was aborted, the fetus was aborted. But if she drinks it and there is no abortion, well then, okay, that was your child and God saying it's cool. So in other words, the message is what? If your wife cheats on you, yeah, you get an abortion. This is in the Bible. Read your Bible. See, unfortunately, with many people who are religious fundamentalists, they already have this ideology and all these preconceived notions and all these beliefs and opinions based on their culture, and then they use their religion to rationalize the things that they already feel, and they cherry-pick all the negative parts. And that's exactly what we see with a guy like Mike Huckabee, because you and I both know if he were to become president, it's not like he would take all that backward social conservatism and marry it with the happy parts like Jesus who wants to take care of the poor. No, he'd disregard all the good parts about helping the poor and caring about the downtrodden, and he would only implement the asshole parts. Why? Because Mike Huckabee is just an asshole. All right, next. All right, for the first time, is this the first time in today's show that it's actually going to get lighter? Maybe. How you like them apples? A man named George Chidi went to a Klan rally and a Confederate rally in Georgia to record some idiots, and oh, they didn't disappoint. He stumbled across this older gentleman waving a Confederate flag, decked out in Confederate flag colors, and the shoes that he was wearing were quite ironic.
The shoes that you're wearing?
Yeah.
What's the matter with...
Well,
that brand.
Huh?
What's the matter with the shoes I'm wearing?
It's the red, the black, and white.
The brand FUBU. FUBU stands for...
Who want to wear?
It stands for us, by us.
I don't care what it's by. I bought them.
There's a black fellow who sort of created it as a brand for African-American
African-American brand. Them shoes that you probably wore were designed by a white man back in the 1920s. But does that make you stop wearing them shoes because a white man designed them?
I don't
care if a black man designed my shoes.
I find it interesting, though, that, like, because it's more than just
the
garage.
I don't hate you. I tried to say that a while ago. I hate not you, but I hate what your people are doing to this country.
My people. Okay. No, you're right.
Are you not black?
Hey.
Oh, that's classic. Instant viral video classic. By the way, check out George Chidi's channel. Shoot on over there and watch the whole thing. But, oh, that was beautiful. Every part of that was hilarious. What's so funny about these racists is that they see black people all as, like, they're all one stereotype. They're all bad. I mean, obviously, he said to this guy, oh, I don't like you. I just hate your people. So I hate every other black person, but you're cool because you're standing right in front of me, and I want to be kind of nice even though I'm still being a dick. So, but they view other people through this lens of their walking, talking stereotype. Meanwhile, who's really the walking, talking stereotype? You are! The out-of-touch, old southern white guy who can't let go of the past. No tea. Like, oh, let me tell you something about the white man and the black man. What your people is doing to our country. Fucked up. Is it? It's what black people are doing that's fucked up. What about, you know, the legacy of slavery? What about Jim Crow? What about segregation? What about systemic racism, which still exists to this day? We've covered endless studies on that, whether it's black people and white people using drugs at a similar rate, black people being arrested four times more often for it, though. Whether it's, look at the net worth, average net worth of white families versus black families. White families, it's over $120,000. Black families, it's $11,000. Which means they're starting in a tremendous hole. There is no equal opportunity. White people are inheriting much more money. Black people are not. So they're when they're born, they're already way behind. It's like you do a 100-yard dash, somebody shoots the gun in the air, white people run 80 yards, and then they look back and say, okay, the black person can start now. How the fuck do you expect them to catch up? They're already so far fucking behind. Which is why you need good government policies in place, why you need a social safety net, why you need to redress the grievances of the past, because it's not like the same day that the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act was signed, poof, racism is gone and everything's all hunky-dory. Caricature. My shoes are made by FUBU. What FUBU? I don't even know what that FUBU mean, man. What's that mean? It's for us, by us. It was actually a black entrepreneur made it. So in order to keep wealth in the black community, it was for black people, by black people. You don't know anything about this? I done just bought some shoes, man. I thought they was nice shoes. I don't like black people. Honey, let's go. We got to get in the car. Turn on that Snoop Dogg song I love. Walking contradictions. Walking contradictions. Too stupid to know that probably many aspects of this guy's life and other white Southerners' lives, it's been made infinitely better because of black people and black society and the different contributions they've made to American society over the years. We've covered it before. There was a great historian on Joe Rogan's podcast. I think his name is Thaddeus Russell. He explained how post-slavery, so like when slaves were brought over to America, they had a distinctly separate culture, which was kind of like a counter to the over-the-top Victorian puritanical culture that white people embraced, where white people were 100% anti-fucking. They barely even wanted to fuck to procreate. They believed in work for work's sake. Work was not a means to an end to get more leisure time and buy material goods. It was work was godly just on its own. So you're supposed to work until you fucking die and not question anything, work 7 days a week. This was the society that they set up. It was brutally repressive. It would fucking wreak havoc on people's mental well-being because it's totally unnatural and totally backwards. And if it wasn't for black culture, black society to counteract some of the insanity of white society over the years, if it wasn't for black culture, you would not see 1/100th of the kind of society we have today, which is much more tolerable, which is, you know, we have a society where the entertainment value is much better. We have, whether you look at Hollywood or you look at music, the contribution of black society to music is fucking endless. It was because of black people. Stand-up comedy is another one. This is an art that could not have been created if it was solely waspy motherfuckers from the KKK who were here and just them. Okay, so again, what you're seeing here is a guy who doesn't even realize it, but he himself is benefiting from a society that had tremendous contributions from African-Americans. And he's just going to embrace his ignorance until the day he dies. And as you see right there, it's not looking like he's going to change. But what he doesn't realize is just his existence and people shining a light on how he acts and what he represents. That will make that ideology die off. Because people look at him and they go, oh, you're really the stereotype. You're the walking caricature. You're a parody of the uneducated, racist southern white person who doesn't know his ass from his elbow. Okay. Next. many I got left here? I got enough. I can squeeze all this in, I think. All right, Caitlyn Jenner. So Caitlyn Jenner has a reality TV show, and there was a scene in the most recent episode that's creating some controversy. She spoke about politics with some of her friends who are also transgender, and she proved to be fairly ignorant. Now, we already kind of knew that because in her big interview, she said she doesn't like President Obama and she's more conservative. Got under my skin even more. Now, I don't know if I can show you the clip because I don't know if the network that she's on is a stickler for copyright. So I'm just going to quote to you the back and forth that she had with her friends here, and you'll see what I mean. So while discussing the homeless and unemployed, Caitlyn says, don't a lot of times they can make more working with social program, they can make more not working with social programs than they actually can with an entry-level job. And then a friend replies, I'd say the great majority of people who are getting help because they need help. Yeah, that would appear to be 100% true. Then Caitlyn says, but you don't want people to get totally dependent on it. That's when they get in trouble. Why should I work? I got a few bucks. I got my room paid for. Okay. And then later on, an LGBT activist named Jenny Boylan said, quote, now I'm worried. Caitlyn has every right to be just as conservative as she chooses, but many transgender men and women need social programs to survive, and that's nothing to be ashamed of. Living in the bubble is an impediment to understanding other people. Kate's going to be a spokesperson for the community. This is something she's going to have to understand. Okay, now, there's been a lot of conversation since the big interview where people say, oh, okay, well, she's conservative. She has a right to be conservative, and, you know, it is what it is. That doesn't take away from it at all. I'm in the camp that says, no, this actually really pisses me off because it shows that Caitlyn Jenner is only liberal when the issue benefits her. So when it comes to her being transgender, oh, I'm as liberal as it gets on that issue because I'm transgender and that affects me. So come on, man, you got to support transgender people. What are you, some sort of bigot? What are you, not a thinker? You're not objective? You can't realize that transgender people exist and they deserve equality? And she's right about all of that. She's right about all of that. But she does not extend that same open-minded viewpoint to people in other circumstances. So the idea that she's putting forth is, well, come on, the people who take the social programs are just kind of lazy, you know what I'm saying? No, Caitlyn, that's not true. In fact, listening to this, it made me want to start some sort of movement where people come out of the closet as poor, and they tell their stories, and they explain exactly what led to the situation that they're in right now. Caitlyn, do you not understand that there are minimum wage jobs in America, they're even not just minimum wage, jobs that pay over minimum wage, where people still don't make enough money to survive if they work full time and they get paid that amount of money. So how can you have a system where people work full time but they don't make enough money to survive? That would be a fucked up system. Am I wrong? So isn't the solution not to do what she's suggesting, which is take away the safety net and, you know, it is what it is, force them to work for less than they could survive on? That's what she's alluding to here. Isn't the solution the opposite? So isn't the solution to make it so that entry-level jobs and minimum-wage jobs pay enough money so people survive? So you set up the incentive so people will always choose work over not working. Now, again, the problem isn't even with the system as it exists right now. I don't believe her. I think what she's saying is false. It's not true. We've covered the stories where it's only 1% of people who take food stamps, for example, are exploiting the system. There's waste, fraud, and abuse in 1% of people who take it. So 99% are taking it just because they need to get by, just because they need to survive, and just because they don't make enough money to feed their kids. So the overwhelming majority of people are not gaming the system. But even if you were to say, okay, let's grant you that, even though it's not true, let's grant you that. The solution would not be, hey, take away the safety net and say, fuck you, go work for enough money where you still can't survive. The solution is, hey, raise the minimum wage to make it a living wage so that when people work, they make enough money to live. No, I'm sorry, man, but it really gets under my skin because it's this closed-minded approach, this approach that's totally not objective because that's outside of Caitlyn's own perspective. She's had money for a very, very long time. So she thinks, well, look, well, it came easy to me, so why the fuck can't it come easy to other people? Just get your shit together. What would be a proper analogy to that? Well, Caitlyn, I'm a man.
I was born biologically male. I feel male. So why can't you get your shit together and just be male? Oh, it's more complicated than that, right? That's right. It is more complicated than that. What I just described is what a stupid person says. So perhaps it's the same thing economically. You're on the wrong side economically when you start judging everybody that's poor. And perhaps you should be more open-minded and more open to facts when it comes to other issues. You shouldn't only be liberal when it's convenient for you. All right, next. Reuters is reporting on a comical decision made by the Indian government. They say, India has blocked hundreds of adult websites to prevent pornography becoming a social nuisance, sparking a debate about censorship and freedom in the world's largest democracy. In India's first big crackdown on internet porn, service providers have been directed to block 857 websites. The government, in a 17-page order issued on July 31st and leaked to freedom of speech activists on Monday, listed offending sites and directed service providers to block access on the grounds of morality and decency. Okay. Yeah, when I hear that, I do not think that the people trying to block porn are moral crusaders. I think they're immoral crusaders. That's a lot like here in the U.S. when it's Dick Cheney and George Bush and people like that who say, oh, we need to go fight in Iraq because of morality. We need to give them democracy and freedom. Hashtag morality. Where's the disagreement here? The disagreement is that you're the one calling for an offensive war. That's not morality. That's hashtag immorality. So the moral crusaders, so-called, are often the immoral crusaders, and that's what I see here. Whether you're liberal and open-minded and tolerant and therefore okay with porn, or you're conservative and you're supposed to believe in small government, people across the spectrum should agree to err on the side of freedom when it comes to this stuff. Now, to be pro-porn does not mean you are pro-sexual assault, does not mean you are pro-treating women or anybody in the industry poorly. It just means you're standing up on the side of freedom. If you legalize it, tax it, and regulate it, then you can fight the abuses. If you make it illegal, you push it underground, and you make the problem even worse. And I never understood, what is it about people? It's got to be a weird mix of religion and culture and other things that make people so scared of sexuality. It's so taboo. It's so wrong. They think it's so unethical. How the fuck do you think you got here? Your mommy and daddy fucked. Hate to break it to you. How do you think this entire planet got populated? Sex. Sex is as natural of an act as you can ever have. There's a reason why the overwhelming majority of people have a sex drive, and it's fairly active. A tiny percentage is asexual, of course. No judgment on them. They could not fuck whoever they'd like. But the majority of people doing something, enjoying doing it, and using it as a stress reliever, you're going to say, no, that's wrong. Well, what's hilarious is that you're being 100% counterproductive to what you say you want. You say we need to get rid of porn so it doesn't become a social nuisance. You just created more of a social nuisance now that you banned it. Now you're in a culture which already has a big rape problem, which we've covered on the show in detail. You're going to take that culture and make it more sexually repressed. You're going to make people more pent up as they walk around on the streets. This is the problem with repression, man. If you go to a society where all the women are covered from head to toe, and then you take one of those guys who's from that society and from that context, and you bring him to America, and they see a girl's hair, they see her forearm or her ankle, they'll be like, oh, I just came on myself. I saw a forehead. That's real. This is a deeply human issue. When you push things in the closet, they come out in weird ways, man. And this is what we're dealing with here. You're going to try to strip away people's sex drive and act like it's bad just by banning porn. How do you think that solves anything? We've taken away porn, now they won't be horny. It's like, that's like in America when they say, teach abstinence only, it'll work. All you have to do is tell the teenagers not to fuck. You've been a teenager. How well do you think that's going to work? As if people are sitting at home, you're like an 18-year-old guy, you're sitting at home, you're like, you know, feeling kind of randy, but, Mom and Dad and Mr. Johnson said to me, not the best idea to touch myself or to have fun with my girlfriend, so I guess I'll let it go. Never happens, never happens. You want to know why? Because they're human. I mean, on some level, that's like somebody saying, you know, I've really had to pee for 8 hours now, but people say I shouldn't pee. I'm just going to hold in my pee. Eventually, you're going to have to fucking pee. Eventually, if you don't release that steam, release, you know, the sexual fluids, they'll pour out of your fucking eyeballs, dog. All right, maybe not literally, but you get my point. So for them to do this, it's only going to create more problems, and it's fundamentally anti-freedom. And if you want to even pretend to be an open and free country, you have to back away from stuff like this because it makes your country worse, not better, and it makes it less free, not more free. It should be that simple, but unfortunately we have, in many places, we have governments that in some areas are way too big, way too active, and way too much in your personal life. All right, I'm running out of time, but just real quick here. So in New York, 63 people have been killed by police officers because they were playing with toy guns. And what happened is, of course, the cops thought that they were real guns, so they were too quick to shoot, and there was miscommunication, and we've seen this time and time again. We've even covered some of those stories. So this wasn't an uncommon thing. And to give you an idea of what the laws were, it used to be the toy guns just looked exactly like real guns, and everybody just accepted it for what it was. But that's when the most accidents happened. And then they mandated that, hey, toy guns should have orange tips on them so people can tell them apart from regular guns. And this is specifically in New York we're talking about here. But even with that, even with the orange tips on the guns, there were still accidents because, for example, if you have it in like your belt buckle or something and you only see the top of the gun could still look like a regular gun because you can't see the tip. So, and also, I mean, if it's dark or something, it's harder to see it. So there were still problems with it. So now New York decided to get creative to solve the problem, and the Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, came up with the following solution. Quote, there was a settlement Monday with Walmart, Sears, Amazon, and other retailers to wipe realistic-looking toy guns from their shelves. The retailers, namely Walmart, must pay fines of more than $300,000 for selling more than 6,400 illegal toy guns from 2012 to 2014. Okay. Now, $300,000 is nothing to companies that are this big, that's clear. But that's not the biggest change that they made. So, and remember, in the rest of the country or in some other places, I think it's legal to have realistic-looking toy guns, just not in New York. So when they're selling these illegal toy guns in New York, it is a problem. So they fine them. But the more important part is there's a new law that makes it so the toy guns have to be totally brightly colored. Yes. See, this is an example of smart regulation. You guys know I'm not a big fan on bans. So alcohol may have problems with it, but you don't ban it. You can regulate it. You can legalize, tax, and regulate it. You can't ban it. I feel the same way for all drugs. There may be some drugs that have really harmful effects. But the best way to handle it is to legalize, tax it, and regulate it. So when you regulate it, you can get rid of some of the more toxic compounds that are used to cut different drugs. So I'm a big fan of smart, efficient regulation, and this is a great example of that. You're not banning toy guns because that would be government that's too big, in my opinion, but you're not leaving it at it as is because that has unintended consequences. So what you're doing is you're finding the smart middle ground. Have legal toy guns, of course. There's nothing wrong with kids playing with toy guns, but just make them brightly colored so that there are no more accidents where people die. That's smart regulation. And honestly, what came to my mind when I heard about this is cigarette regulation. So you guys know me, I'm not in favor of banning cigarettes, even though untold numbers of people die from cigarettes every year. Cigarettes are horrible for you. Still, though, I believe in freedom, so I'm not in favor of banning it. So then what do? Smart, efficient regulation. There's a middle ground. So what you can do is say, okay, cigarettes are legal, but here's a list of chemicals that we know are carcinogenic that you can't put in the cigarettes. And when you do that and you enforce that regulation, you make it so that the cigarettes are just much less dangerous than they would be otherwise. So I've always been a fan of the middle ground. I've always been a fan of smart regulation. I don't like either extreme. Don't leave everything exactly as is in an anarchistic way, and don't ban everything in a fascist way. There's a smart, healthy, safe middle ground, which really almost pleases everybody, because the thing is still legal, it's just more safe because of intelligent regulation. All right, guys, out of time. Love you. Gotta go. Peace.